when I was growing up, especially elementary school, I would often have trouble prioritizing things that I needed to do, whether it was homework or chores around the house or other things. And if I had a lot of things that needed to get done, sometimes I would just get overwhelmed and not know where to start. And I remember that I had a teacher who tried to help me with this. I think I was, maybe fourth or fifth grade. And she asked me to think about all of the homework that I needed to do. I think it was over a weekend. And she said, determine which of those things is the most important one to get done. Studying for a test would take precedent over just a worksheet assignment, since it would contribute more points towards my grade. And she told me, always start with the most important thing and then work my way down. And I still try to do this, even if I make a to-do list, which I rarely do because I hate to-do lists. But when I do, I'll write down everything that needs to be done, but then I'll go back and put things in priority order, what needs to get done first, and so on down the list. But how do you determine always what the most important thing is? Other than Colin, do we have any Star Trek fans out here? James T. Kirk, Next Generation, even the new CBS series or the new movies that are out there? Well, if you've ever watched any Star Trek, the organization that Captain Kirk and all of the rest work for is an organization known as Starfleet. I'm going to get really geeky here for a minute. No pressure. Starfleet has rules and guidelines that their people need to follow. And Starfleet's General Order Number 1 is also known as the Prime Directive. It is the number one rule that everyone needs to abide by. Now, it's not necessary to know what the Prime Directive is, but the Prime Directive is their guiding principle as they explore strange new worlds, seek out new life and new civilizations, and boldly go where no one has gone before. The Prime Directive is rule number one, the most important thing as they go about their work. Well, Jesus was once asked, what's the most important thing? What's rule number one, Jesus? But this guy wasn't exactly just looking for help or for guidance. Instead, this question was asked by a religious legal expert. Scriptures tell us it was a lawyer, but it's not exactly a lawyer like we think of a lawyer, not a civil or a criminal lawyer. This was a religious lawyer, someone whose job it was to interpret and enforce the laws of Moses. And Jesus had just kind of humiliated a bunch of the religious leaders and teachers and kind of shown them up in front of the people. And so this lawyer is actually trying to trap Jesus. He's trying to get Jesus to say that something other than is the most important thing. They're trying to trick Jesus into blasphemy. But instead of falling into that trap, Jesus lays out the most important thing. And his answer is in line with Old Testament teaching. He actually quotes from the book of Deuteronomy in his answer. And what did Jesus say was the most important thing? He says to love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and the greatest commandment. Loving God is the most important thing. So it should be no surprise to us that John Wesley lists that as the first characteristic of a Methodist. Wesley wrote that he has no one in heaven but God, and there is no one on earth he desires but God. So what does it mean to love God with all of our heart, soul, mind, and strength? What does it mean to want no one on heaven or earth other than God? How do we live out this most important thing? Well, first of all, let's talk about love. Love in this instant is not a Hallmark card, roses and flowers and butterflies in the stomach kind of love. Jesus is not talking about love as a feeling. He doesn't tell us to feel love for God or to have love for God. He says, love God. And if we have any grammar nerds in here, love in that sentence is a verb. It is an action word. It is something to do. It is not an emotion. So how then do we do love? Let's look at the most famous Bible passage about love. 1 Corinthians 13 helps us to understand what love looks like. It says in 1 Corinthians that love is patient, love is kind, love is not envious or boastful or arrogant or rude. Love does not insist on its own way. It is not irritable or resentful. Love does not rejoice in wrongdoing, but rejoices in the truth. Love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never ends. Now, how many of us have heard that passage at a wedding? Or 50? Yeah. Most of us think about this passage in regards to relationships, specifically marriage. But I contend that this passage applies to so much more than just marriage. I think it involves our love of God and our love of neighbors. When Jesus tells us to love the Lord our God, he says to do so with all of our heart, soul, and mind, remember. It's not just actions of our hands or our mouths, but it runs much, much deeper than that. Corinthians tells us love is patient. You know, I would really like it if God just would do things on my timeline. I hear the giggles. I know you're right there with me, right? If you've ever seen the Willy Wonka movie, sometimes when it comes to this, I feel like the spoiled little rich girl, Veruca Salt. I want it now! Sometimes that's how I pray to God. You know, God, if you could just do this now, that would be great. If you could just give me this, whatever it is that I want now. If you could just heal my friend now. If you could just, you know, give us world peace now, that would be great. But when we love God, we trust in God's timing. And we will be patient and know that God will work on the best timeline. That may not be our timeline, but it is the best one. Love is kind, we are told. Well, one way that we can be kind to God is to be kind to all that God has created. People, animals, the planet that we live on. You know, as I was thinking about this one, I thought about guests that we would have to our home throughout the years. And I knew those who really cared about me, when they came into my home, how they treated me, how they treated Verge, how they treated my kids, how they treated our home, spoke volumes to how they felt about us. Someone who doesn't care about you doesn't care if they leave a mess behind in your house or is mean to your children or kicks your dog or, you know, whatever. How kind we are to one another exhibits love. Love is also not envious or boastful or rude. Each of these, envy, boasting, rudeness, come from a place in ourselves that values self over others. We're envious because I deserve that thing that you have. We're boasting because I'm better than you are. Or we're rude because I don't have time for you. I'm more important than you. It values self over others. But if we truly love God, we understand that God is and always should be first, not us. Loving God means putting God's will first, means doing all that we do not for our glory or our praise or recognition or comfort or needs, but rather doing all that we do only for the glory of God. And love does not insist upon its own way. Loving God means following God's will. It's not about our pleasure, our wants, our desires. It is always and only about God. Loving is not irritable or resentful. Putting God first in our lives shouldn't be a drag. You escaped. Oh, Wesleyan, you are adorable. Oh, let's see. I don't even know where I was here. Oh, yeah. Loving God means that we don't insist on our own way. Loving God means following God's will. It's always about God. Love is not irritable or resentful. Putting God first in our lives shouldn't be a drag. It should be joyful. It should not feel as though we are deprived or undeserving or worthless. Putting God first should be a joyful thing. And I know personally in my life it isn't always that way. There are a lot of times that my selfishness gets in the way. But when I can manage to put my selfishness away, if I can refocus away from myself and back on God, those negative feelings go away and the joy returns. Corinthians also said that love does not rejoice in wrongdoing. If we love God, then we don't celebrate our sins. If we love God, we don't hold fast to those things that separate us from God or from one another. If we love God, we find joy in living in the ways of God. But it also says that love does rejoice in the truth. Rejoice. To exude joy. And in joy there is peace. The love of God brings us peace of mind, peace of spirit, as we live in the truth. But Jesus also said, I am the truth. So loving God involves rejoicing in Jesus, rejoicing that God, the God made flesh, gave up the perfectness of heaven to come down and be born a human, to live a human life in all of its trials, in all of its pain. And then Jesus loved us enough to give himself over to torture and execution and death and hell. And then still loved us enough to come back to us through resurrection, giving us hope that overcomes everything else. So let us rejoice in that. Friends, our love of God needs to be strong if it's going to bear all things, endure all things, believe all things, hope all things. The things of this world, the things of this life that get thrown at us are temporary and fleeting and really of little consequence in the light of the love of God. So when we focus on God, we can bear all things, hope throughout all things, believe in the midst of all things, and endure all that comes our way because we have the God of all things in our hearts. Love never ends. And I know that that feels fragile in this world because human love is faulty. But friends, God's love never ends. God's love for you never ends. Now, all of this, that's the ideal, right? That's the goal. Will we hit every single one of these marks every moment of every day? No, we won't. We are human. We are broken. We are faulty. But this is the kind of love that we should be striving towards. loving God is a process that every Christian undertakes. And just like any skill or any sport, we get better the more we practice it. John Wesley referred to this getting better of love, as perfecting grace. Not that we ourselves would become perfect, but that our love could become more perfect as time goes on. And so my prayer for all of us, as we strive to love God with all of our heart, with all of our soul, with all of our mind, and with all of our strength my prayer is actually part of a song. It comes from the old musical, 60s, 70s, I don't know, Godspell, when the musical came out. Has anyone ever seen Godspell? A few of you. There is a song, and the chorus of the song goes, day by day, oh dear Lord, three things I pray, to see thee more clearly, to love thee more dearly, follow thee more nearly, day by day. May that be our goal, day by day, to love God more dearly. Amen.